Coming to you from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios, you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on WVQC LP Cincinnati 95.7 FM. WVQC LP, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. WVQC LP does not endorse any political campaign or candidates. The opinions expressed on Hemp Rock Radio do not reflect the views of WVQC LP, Media Bridges, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect the views of Hemp Rock and our guests. Thanks for listening. Welcome, Hemp Rockers, to Radio Free Queen City and the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the happy Hemptress and joint hosts, the Burn Man and the Dope Boy Pot and Hash, featuring the Pottsbury Bakery and Hemp Rock Cafe on WVQC LP 95.7 FM, the voice of the Queen City.
WVQC.org. 95.7 is online at WVQC.org. Hemp Rock is at HempRock.com, and the Hemp Rock Hemp Line is at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP.
To talk to us during the show, call 513-564-9600. That's 513-564-9600.
And now, here's Hemp Rock Radio with all things hemp, marijuana, the drug war, and more, including guests, music, news, food, and lots of fun here on 95.7 FM WVQC LP, low power to the people.
A message about cannabis from former Sheriff's Deputy Jeffrey Studdard.
Like many other cops and law enforcement professionals, I have seen firsthand that the current approach on cannabis is simply not working. It's led to violent drug cartels, dealers in our schools, and our streets, and cost millions of dollars without reducing consumption. That's why Cops Support Tax Cannabis 2010, the initiative to control and tax cannabis. It will provide billions to fund what matters and allow police to focus on violent crime. It's time to control it and tax it.
If you believe it's time to end cannabis prohibition, make a donation to Tax Cannabis 2010. Help spread the word about this common sense solution for a broken budget and a failed government policy. Learn more at taxcannabis.org or call 510-251-2507. That's 510-251-2507. Join the historic fight to change the system at taxcannabis.org. Paid for by Tax Cannabis 2010 with major funding from SK Seymour LLC, a medical cannabis provider, DBA Oaksterdam University, a cannabis educator.
All right, this is the Happy Hemptress. I am here at the Hemp Rock headquarters. It is the Friday night. We are recording just in time for the coming up elections on Tuesday, not only around the city and around the state, but also around the country. And I have very special guests on the phone with me tonight. It is Chris Conrad and Mickey Norris, both who are leading in California Prop 19, which this coming Tuesday's elections, which officially when you're hearing this will be tomorrow in California for taxing and regulating marijuana. Hey guys, how are you doing tonight?
Very well. Very excited about the upcoming election.
Yeah, great to hear your voice again, Lynn, and greetings to Ohio. We hope that you'll be celebrating with us in a couple of days.
Well, you can bet when this passes on Tuesday, we will be celebrating here in Cincinnati and all over Ohio. And I have to say, I'm very, very blessed and very happy to be able to have you guys on Hemp Rock Radio here. Of course, it is for WVQC and the new Hemp Rock Radio show here in Cincinnati. And you guys were on my show at another station here in Cincinnati many years ago, and probably 1994 and even after that. And I'm very, very pleased to have you guys on again after all these years.
Has it been that long?
It has been.
I remember like yesterday.
Me too. Absolutely.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's taken all this time just to get to where we are today. I mean, back in 1994, we were talking about the many uses of the hemp plant and all its glory for industrial purposes, for medical uses, for personal use. And at that point in 1994, what we had was a little bit of hemp products coming into the country. And I think we might have had a city or two in California that allowed medical marijuana, tolerance, I should say, for medical marijuana, making it the lowest priority. And look where we are today. We're in 14 states with medical marijuana, and the possibility of actually legalizing it in some place in the world on Tuesday.
Yeah, right here in the U.S., in fact.
Right here in the U.S.
And you may remember, Lynn, that we spoke back in the day about having an Amsterdam here in America. And,
absolutely.
So hopefully we'll be able to have one in the San Francisco Bay Area and some other parts of California. We'd like to invite everybody to come out there. Just get your friends in California to go out and make sure they vote yes on Prop 19. There's a lot of misinformation going on right now. But if you think pot should be legalized, if you think cannabis should be allowed for adult use, you need to get out there and get your friends voting yes on Prop 19.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned, you know, how long it's taken for us to get here, and that's one of the things I want to do real quick is go backwards, and each of you, whichever first wants to take the telephone, as they say, since you're not really on a microphone, to tell the folks listening exactly what your history is and where you what you were doing, say, 20 years ago that led you to this point. Now, you know, I can very quickly say I know, Chris, right off the top, you were one of the first editors for The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and your first book was Hemp Lifeline to the Future, and you've had many since. And Mickey, yourself, you have many works as well, the Cannabis Consumer Organization, things like that. So fill in the gaps that I didn't tell just now.
Why don't you take the first part, Chris?
All right. It all started at a very specific time for me in November of 1988 when I decided it was time to do something about the marijuana laws. And so I did my research and read the Marijuana Tax Act hearings and followed the history all the way up to that date, and I thought I came up with a nice plan of how to change it. And I've been working on that plan ever since. I thought it was going to take at least 5 years. It turns out I may have been a little bit wrong by that. But what we have seen is like huge accomplishments that have gone on, and we've been able to see our effect around the world. In addition to writing numerous books, Mickey and I were the curators of the Hash Marijuana and Hemp Museum in Amsterdam, which we invite everyone to go, of course. And we were quite active over there. And that's where I got my experience of growing marijuana legally in Europe. Which then, when we came back, we worked with Jack Herer on the California Hemp and Health Initiative. I was a co-author of that with him, and we worked the state for some time. And then when Prop 215 came along, we shifted over, and we're doing that. Oh, I forgot to mention, I was also the first president of the Hemp Industries Association.
Yes.
In 1994. And I was on the board of the HIA in 2001 when we voted to sue the DEA, which we successfully did, to keep hemp seed food products legal.
Yes, and I have to say I love the hemp milk.
Thanks. Well, Matthew, you should do the next part because this is where the human rights and the drug war comes in 95.
Okay, well, Chris kind of jumped over in the time frame, but around the chronologically. But going back to 1995, it was the 50th anniversary of the United Nations, and Chris and I were thinking about that people in prison on marijuana offenses were really prisoners of conscience and prisoners of war. And at that time, we came across some photos and stories of people serving time in prison. And we developed, along with this woman that we had met named Virginia Reznor, who was the California Families Against Mandatory Minimums representative, we created a photo exhibit called Human Rights 95 Atrocities of the Drug War to unveil at the 50th anniversary of the United Nations in order to show the world community that the United States is having serious issues with our human rights, serious problems in the way that we are dealing with drugs in this country. And our human rights display actually talked about the whole drug war and all drug offenders, not just marijuana. But because all of the whole drug war was subverting our Constitution and also violating many of our human rights. So we took that photo exhibit that was quite extensive to various places in the country and helped to create more portable forms of it for different activist groups around the country as well, to start putting a human face on the drug war, to show that the United States was in fact violating our human rights, and that we had the distinction, because of the way we were treating drugs in this country, that the United States was the number one incarcerator in the world, with the most people per capita in prison. And so we did that, and that ended up becoming a book called Shattered Lives, Portraits from America's Drug War. And that book also made quite an impact, I believe, in terms of putting a face on this problem, that there are real people with real families and children and communities that are being impacted by our drug policies, and it's definitely causing more harm than good. So we did that, and then in 2002, I decided to take a different tack because I felt so I guess violated or so impacted by this project that we did, Human Rights and the Drug War, and people can look it up online still at hr95.org. But we just felt like this whole drug war was so wrong that we needed to take a different tack. I was getting personally a little bit, I couldn't take the victimization anymore. I had to strike out, but come up with a different tact that would be a little bit more uplifting. And so I created the Cannabis Consumers Campaign project, where we were, instead of telling all the horror stories of the drug war, we decided to show the faces of people who use cannabis and ask them to come out of the closet, so that we can show that we are good, contributing, productive members of society, that society and the government can lose their excuse for perpetuating marijuana prohibition and all the discrimination and the destructiveness that policy perpetuates. So we launched the Cannabis Consumers Campaign at cannabisconsumers.org, and which, when we were collecting surveys and photos, and people were coming out of the closet, and we were trying to dispel the myths and stereotypes and really change the image of who cannabis consumers were. So we did that, and that's still an ongoing project, and people can visit that at cannabisconsumers.org. But basically, that became our equal rights campaign, and we felt like by ending marijuana prohibition, that'll really help the people in prison get out of there, because that is a big motivation, and it should be for people in this country, because there's still a good over 800,000 arrests every year in the United States for marijuana offenses. And it's still a big, major problem.
Yeah, and so then if I can
go ahead,
back in time a little bit, then.
Sure.
After we initially went off with our doing stuff on the subject of hemp primarily, we were also working on the medical marijuana issue and so forth. And so in 1996, when Proposition 215 was taking form, we were instrumental in getting the funding and getting the signatures to put on the ballot to make sure that we got medical marijuana legalized here in California. And by coincidence, as it were, the fact that I had had legal experience growing marijuana in Holland turned out to position me to be an expert witness in court, where I could talk about my training and experience growing marijuana without incriminating myself. And so that, based along with all my research for my books, Hemp Lifeline to the Future and Hemp for Health and so forth, put me into a position where I testified in many of the most important cases here in California: the People versus Trippett, the People versus Maurer, People versus Merzano, and the landmark People v. Kelly decision. These are all court rulings that have, where my testimony has been instrumental in creating case law here in California. And so we also worked with the legislature, though, and helped to craft Senate Bill 420, which got passed here in the year 2003 and went into effect in 2004, that legalized medical marijuana collectives and created a safe harbor from arrest for patients, created a state ID card program. And again, my testimony in court has affected some of the case law in that regard as well, because actually the same the rulings I just mentioned in some of those involved SB 420. And so well, I don't know. Do you want to go straight 19 or?
Well, we can talk about the West Coast Police.
Yeah, there we go.
Absolutely.
Our educational campaign, which went from doing books and exhibits and museums
and literature.
And literature to doing, first, for a couple of years, I did a newspaper called the Oaksterdam News.
Out of Oakland.
And subsequently, Mickey and I have become publishers of our own newspaper, the West Coast Leaf. And so, Mickey, why don't you talk about that one?
Well, I'm hoping that people can just check it out online at westcoastleaf.com. But what we do is we cover news, politics, research, culture, reviews. We have a listing of resources that people can get involved in, a calendar. But really, it's packed full of information about what the major reform organizations are up to and doing. And you can see for yourself that a lot is happening in the world of cannabis, and we're there to report it as the cannabis newspaper of record. And it's also available through subscription if the people are interested in seeing a hard copy, because we're actively working right now on our winter issue, but the current issue, the autumn issue, has a lot of coverage on Prop 19, and in fact it has a pull-out center poster, a Yes on 19 poster, that would be a good kind of memento of this historic time that we're facing now. And so maybe this is a good segue into talking a little bit about what's going on here with Prop 19.
Well, I want to add to that that one of the reasons why I wanted you guys to present to everybody who you are is that, you know, there is a lot of negativity coming from within our own movement and, of course, outside of our own movement. But some folks who do know you guys and a lot of folks who don't know you guys have this impression that Richard Lee, MS patient in a wheelchair, and you guys are like out to monopolize everything and you're evil and you are trying to make more rules and more laws. And frankly, from this end of the country, I'm disgusted with the whole thing. And that's why I want people to understand where you guys come from. You guys aren't like somebody just jumped on the bandwagon and says, let's get this done. Y'all have been working this for years and years and years. And you didn't suddenly come up with this conspiracy thing to get Prop 19 passed so it puts the medical out of business. But I also want to very quickly add, I support the medical. We always have known that marijuana is medicine. But the problem that I have right now is some of the dispensaries in California opposing Prop 19. And I fear that some of the motivation, or most of the motivation, is so they can keep their prices up. The prices in dispensaries, as you know, are the same as street prices in states that don't have medical. That, to me, is ludicrous. I'm glad that people can go get the medicine, but the price is outrageous compared to what we see in the sense of that it's quasi-legal. Legalization should bring and drive the prices down. So for me, I would rather pay a little bit of tax on something that, if I don't know how to grow it myself or in between my own little crops, I can go down to the street and buy it and pay some tax on it. That, to me, is a better situation than me having to go pay an average, as you know, of $150 to a doctor to tell me what I already know. So I can then have my little paper to go say, okay, I'm allowed to have it. And then you get this stuff where, oh, anybody can fake a headache. Well, sure, but the point is that it does help a headache, so why should you have to fake a headache? So I have this issue with some of the people that are within our own movement, and I know you guys are seeing this. So along with explaining some of the things that you want people to know, you can address that as well on how you feel about that situation.
Well, thanks, Flynn. In fact, as you say, we go back a really long way on this. We just set upon a course and have dedicated our lives to it for more than 20 years now. And the same can actually be said true of Richard Lee. And in fact, when you look at what he's done, he told us back in 1994 that he planned to make a Amsterdam here in America, and he came to Oakland after Proposition 215 was passed and helped to create the Oaksterdam legacy that is there to this day.
Yep.
And you know, when he made some money by doing the work, he took it and he used it to fund an initiative that will give him more competition than he has now. So
that's true.
How he could be said to be somehow profiteering from this whole thing is shows disrespect for somebody who has contributed so much to this movement. And there's plenty of people who've made a lot of money selling marijuana. How many of them have put down their own money to legalize it?
There's been a few, Chris, who have contributed, actually, including Harborside and others.
True.
There have been a few collectives. I mean, there are some collectives that are on board. A lot of people are. Lynn, what you're referring to is a fringe group. I believe that the majority of people who are medical marijuana patients do support Prop 19, but the people that are opposed to it, I think, are really operating out of a lot of misinterpretation of the what the initiative does, and fear of change, their fear of the unknown, of how are they going to be impacted. A lot of people are thriving under the current prohibitionist kind of quasi unclear system that's going on here in California in terms of what's allowed and what's not, and people are getting picked off, you know, almost semi-randomly, it seems like, at times, that different collectives are getting raided, different things are happening. It's kind of like they're operating, for the most part, okay, but the police are still active. The DEA is still trying to come in periodically and raid these places. So they're not all that safe, and that's why I don't really understand why they'd want to keep the status quo going. And
yeah, for example, since Proposition 215 passed, I've investigated something like 1,500 court cases, more than half of them people who considered what they were doing legal under medical marijuana laws. So that gives you an idea that this idea that there's this huge defense right now, it's a hard-fought defense that people have, not this giant, easy situation that people kind of make it sound like.
I think, you know, I think the collectives that are operating now, if they are good collectives and the people who are growing now, who are making, you know, they're making profits that are inflated because we are paying the prohibition tax on it.
Yeah.
With it being illegal and not, you know, they're not, well, not completely illegal. I mean, there are collectives that are operating totally legally, and growers who are connected with these collectives that are operating completely legally, and they will continue to do so. But there are, I think, it is a system right now, though, that is relatively unregulated, and that's what people are clamoring for now. We feel that it's time for some regulations. It needs to get more controlled. It's a billion-dollar crop already in California, and we need to legitimize it and reap the tax revenue that can be gained from a legal commodity. And actually, after Prop 19 passes, the prices should come way down. I mean, the RAND Corporation did a study on it. They thought it would come down by, you know, tenfold. I think that's a bit optimistic on their part. But even with a hefty tax on it, the prices will have to become less than the current prices in order to get rid of any black market that is out there. That's the only way it's going to be a successful program, and it will be ultimately. It's going to take a few years, I think, to actually completely get it regulated and get it the system implemented around the state, but
well,
it should be very successful.
Well, I know that some of the issues people are having or are afraid of is that different precincts, different counties, different cities throughout the state can do a different tax, and how that's going to be all confusing and blah, 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 this argument. My argument is this. Here in Cincinnati, for instance, in Ohio, the taxes on cigarettes is more than Kentucky. So a lot of Cincinnati people will drive across the river, buy cigarettes, and come back to Ohio to save money. On food, for instance, if you're in Kentucky and you take food out at a drive-thru, you get taxed. In Ohio, you don't. But if you eat the food in the restaurant, you do. In both Kentucky and Ohio, food at the grocery store is non-taxed, but in West Virginia, it is. So that it loses their argument right there to say, well, but everybody will be different. People will figure out where it's cheaper. Now, I do believe that it should be a percentage tax, such as 6 or 7% that there is on regular consumer products in most states. Although I supported Ammiano's bill because it's a forward step, I was a little bit iffy on that $50 an ounce tax, because I do believe in time the price of an ounce will probably drop to lower than $50. And if it is, I don't think that the tax should be that much tax on something that doesn't cost that much. It should be a general consumer tax, and I hope that the cities and states go in that design with it, because that's usually what consumer taxes are. Anything beyond 8, 9, 10%, people start going, now, wait a minute. So that is the way the tax should be. And again, I would rather pay a little bit of tax on my consumer products that I buy than going and making the doctors fat rich with the medical things. Not to say that it isn't medical. Obviously, it is. If your doctor wants to tell you that you should use it, he can do that, or she can do that, but I don't think you should have to necessarily pay that kind of a price. If you want to pay an office visit to see what your doctor says about it, then that's between doctor and patient. So I've always supported the medical, but I also, even back in the early 90s when the fight for medical was taken hold, I had this little bit of a fear that down the road that there would be this separation, to where then you're getting things such as some of the patients saying, well, if you're not a patient, you shouldn't get it. And then you got the people who think they're not a patient saying, oh, the patients are elitist. And it's this big fight within our own movement, and not even the movement itself, but just people that are the patients themselves that might not be doing anything active other than being the patient themselves. So coming from a retail wholesale background through my family with grocery store, I understand that kind of a tax. And again, it doesn't matter, such as alcohol regulation. In Kentucky, you have the state is wet now for many years after prohibition, but there's still small cities and small precincts, small counties that are still dry within the state that's wet. So again, that's another reason to say that the argument does not work for those who are opposed to Prop 19. Now, I want to ask you a question, Mickey.
Can I mention some of those things? I mean, like, threw out a dozen things there.
Sure.
One thing is that, you know, Jack Herer specifically warned us, and his great concern about Prop 215 and why he opposed it initially was because he said if we get that it's going to create complacency and entitlement. Complacency, that people feel like that they don't have to work for reform anymore, and entitlement, that there'd be a certain group of people who feel like that they're entitled to better treatment than everybody else.
Yes.
And in a sense, that kind of is what we've seen happening in California. The other thing is that we really do support the dispensaries very much. I mean, I fight in court to protect dispensaries and their supply line every day. We do have some protections now, and that's why we would not have supported Prop 19 if it didn't protect it over and over again in the way that it's written. It's kind of complicated to explain, but if you just look at sections, purposes number 7 and 8, you'll see some statute. The code that's written in there as being protected is Prop 215 and SB 420. It's just under a different legal name, and that confuses people, but it really is protected completely by that if you were to look that up, what that legal code means there. And the other thing is that the whole idea of legalizing cannabis, to me, that is my goal, to legalize industrial hemp, medical marijuana, adult use and access to marijuana, and regulated commercial market for it. Those have been my goals for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Now, there's people who are throwing in all sorts of other little issues, like they're against corporations. Well, but they buy gas from gas companies.
Yes.
Corporations. You know, yeah. You've got the Chamber of Commerce, the biggest corporation, the biggest chauffeur corporations in the state, is opposed to Prop 19. You know, so there's kind of like they themselves don't really follow their anti-corporate thing and so forth, but it's just it's things that they throw into it. Or the anti-tax people. It's like, oh, well, marijuana should be taxed. Well, you know, I'm a businessman, and I have to pay taxes.
Right.
For a marijuana business person, why would I say, oh, well, but you should be different. You shouldn't have to pay your share, but I should.
Exactly.
Now, the voter's not going to buy that. And the other thing is that what Prop 19 really does is it makes it legal for adults over 21 in California to possess, transport, cultivate, and share up to an ounce of marijuana at any time, a 25 square foot area in their home, and it gives them a defense which is comparable to what the medical marijuana patients have to defend amounts that are greater than that. They just have to show that they weren't selling it illegally, is essentially what it is. It's intended to be for their own immediate personal use and so forth. And so it does it in a way that the legislature could never, ever, ever, ever again make marijuana illegal.
Hi, we're Cheech and Chong, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on Radio Free Queens City, WVQC.org, Cincinnati's 95.7 FM.
It does it in a way where it doesn't authorize any taxes on personal growing and sharing of marijuana. The only taxes that are authorized are on businesses, which, like I said, why not?
Why not?
So I don't find that to be a problem. And so these people who say, like, well, you know, they shouldn't be able to regulate it, it's like every city in California has ordinances about things like dogs.
Yes.
You can only have three dogs, you can only have two dogs, you can only have four dogs, whatever it is. Does that mean dogs are illegal? Chickens. You're not even allowed to have roosters in the cities around here. It's only chickens. Does that mean chickens are illegal? No. Chickens are illegal. Dogs are illegal. But that doesn't mean, or hunting, you know? It's like, it's not just, oh, well, you can go out there and hunt and just kill everything you want and bring it in.
No,
we have rules in society, and that has to apply to the adult responsible use of cannabis. And that's what Prop 19 is about. It's not trying to secretly backdoor in giant growers. It's trying to give cities a motive to bring it above board and collect those taxes instead of paying it to, the Mexican import companies or the growers who are, like, doing diesel spills out in the forest and, getting into our national forest and stuff and screwing stuff up. We don't need that. We can do better, and it's just time to bring it above board and do that. That's why I vote yes on Prop 19.
Absolutely. Now, I've had somebody ask me a question on the 25 square foot. Does that include a mother? If somebody wants to have a mother to make clones, or can the mother be somewhere else? How would people technically keep safe within that 25 feet?
Well, the plan that most people I know are talking about is you have a 4x4 grow for your flowering, and then you have another 3x3 area that's going to be your mother's and your start, and then that leaves you to about a couple of square feet of safety margins in case something goes over. But remember, again, this is just for purposes
personal.
Of being immune from arrest.
Yeah,
if
personal
arrested,
use.
You'd have a new affirmative defense that
yes.
is personal.
Now, that's only for actually non-medical adult use.
Right, right.
We're not talking about the people who have doctor's recommendations will have the same protections that they have now.
So if somebody wants to keep that, they can go to the doctor and pay the doctor to get that medical card. But if they don't want to pay that and they'd rather just do a personal adult use, it doesn't have to be within that 25 feet. The 25 feet can be broke up to equal 25 feet.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's very important because a lot of people don't know, and they're going, yeah, but then what about the babies? What about the mother? Where do you put it? So that is the best explanation that I would be able to use now to diffuse that argument.
And
also, under the medical marijuana laws, which are completely protected, you can grow with immunity from arrest. You can grow six mature plants. So, you know, sometimes one plant could be bigger than 25 square feet.
That's right.
So if you're going to grow those kind of plants, well, get a doctor's approval. I mean, is it that hard? Does that
right.
mean other people should have to go to jail and get tickets and stuff?
Because that's right.
You don't want to get a doctor's note that you would have to get anyway? I mean,
right.
Now, I want to add also to the tax, because it is most important that it has the hemp included, and that's really why marijuana is illegal, and you and I and Mickey and everybody that's seen this information for years now knows that it's really not about getting high. It is whether it's the medical, the oil, the plastics, the ropes, the cloth, the paper. We could go on.
Equal rights.
And equal rights. But as far as, I mean, you don't tax equal rights, but you certainly can tax paper made from hemp. You can tax rope made from hemp. You can tax clothes made from hemp. You can tax ethanol made from the stock of the plant that can run in my ethanol vehicle, things along those lines. So people have to realize that it isn't just going to be tax on consumer bought in the retail business to consume for altering your consciousness. That if a state sells hemp milk like West Virginia, that hemp milk can be taxed. In Ohio and in Kentucky, it is not. But aside from the food, all other consumer products are taxed. So the tax ability is almost infinite to the amount of products that can be made. And that's not even including the smoking aspect of it or the medical aspect of it.
And that's not including all the income tax that'll be generated from all the jobs that'll be created by Prop 19 in this industry that would have so many so much variety and so much potential.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why we have, in California, it's been a very interesting phenomenon. An incredible coalition has been formed, like we've never seen before, in support of Prop 19. And one of our bigger supporters has come from some unions here, the SEIU, the United Commercial and Food Workers, and they're out there campaigning for us because they see potential for jobs, good paying jobs and union jobs. So that's starting to get some traction as well. And so there is a lot of revenue to be made from people who are actually earning an income, an honest, above board income and paying taxes. And this is where I think if somebody has developed a good skill to grow cannabis, they will have jobs in a post Prop 19 world more than we have now, and they won't be subjected to arrest and incarceration.
Exactly.
In the process. And, you know, there's a lot of potential after Prop 19. But, you know, if I can go on a little bit with some of the support that the campaign has generated, Lynn.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's been very exciting to see because we've also got the California NAACP and the ACLU, various chapters of that, along with a tremendous amount of support. And people can see all of our endorsements on yeson19.com if they want to go visit that, spend a little time on the website. But they can see, you know, it's an incredible amount of support from those, the Latino Voters League. We've got the National Black Officers Association and the National Latino Officers Police Association. I mean, and these people are there because they know that the marijuana prohibition has been implemented in a very racist way, that African Americans and Latinos have been disproportionately arrested and incarcerated during marijuana prohibition, way out of whack to their use and numbers. We've gotten the endorsement, in fact, the former Surgeon General, Joycelyn Elders,
yes,
has not only endorsed it, but she signed the rebuttal argument for Prop 19. And we have this, you know, emergency room doctor, who was actually the former president of the American College of Emergency Physicians, who's endorsed it because he said he wasn't seeing the emergency room admissions that they would see for alcohol. He said it's way, way low. You just don't see it.
Even though people that are opposed to marijuana claim that, oh my God, you find emergencies full of marijuana people all the time. That's an absolute outright lie.
Right.
You know, one of my favorites of that is the Baltimore trauma study that was toted around, saying that something like a third of the people in car accidents in this out of 1,000 that were in Baltimore had marijuana in their system. Then when you get to the part of who is driving, it was like 3%.
Yeah. And they're probably drunk on top of the getting high.
Yeah, right. But I mean, it's like, so they were not represented in the drivers at all.
Yeah, exactly.
At all in the drivers. They were, you know, they were the passengers, and that was the basis of the statistics.
Yeah.
Passengers had spoken.
crazy.
But we have a lot of law enforcement support, too. I mean, we have the former police chief of San Jose, Joe McNamara, who's done a TV ad for the campaign, and you can see that on yeson19.com, too, because, you know, these law enforcement officers who have been in the field know that marijuana prohibition has failed. I mean, it's just a failed policy, and it doesn't make sense to criminalize good people. And they believe that, you know, the police resources, law enforcement resources, can be better used going after violent and serious criminals and aimed towards, you know, some of the Mexican cartel activities that's been going on, and as well as, gangs that might be involved in some of this activity. But there is some, they believe that it's a failed policy. The law enforcement against prohibition is out there. They've been really taking this campaign on and are helping the campaign and the public realize that, you know, our public safety is being compromised by keeping the policy going, because the police are spending way too much of their time arresting and stopping and incarcerating good people when they were hurting for these resources to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And also, the exciting thing also is that all of the major reform organizations who have been working on this issue for so long, NORML, the Marijuana Policy Project, the Drug Policy Alliance, Drug Sense, DRCNet, Cannabis Consumers Campaign, Safe Access Now, the SSDP, we've got the Courage Campaign and Fire Dog Lake and the SSDP are working together to get out the vote. And in fact, they're soliciting the help of people all over the country to get involved to help to get out the vote. And they have a website, which is justsaynow.firedoglake.com. That's justsaynow.firedoglake.com, where people can go and sign up to actually help phone bank and get out the vote. So if you don't live in California and can't vote for it, a good way to get involved with the campaign at this point, the final weekend, is to go to that website and sign up, and you can help phone bank and find out who are our supporters so we can get them to the polls on Tuesday so that we can legalize it, so that we can end this scourge of marijuana prohibition that has shattered so many good lives and kept, you know, good people down. And as a cannabis consumer myself, I cannot wait for the day when I will be treated equally in my own country, because I am a good person, and I'm a good tax-paying person, I'm a contributing member of society, and I don't feel like I should have to live my life always looking over my shoulder and being treated differently than anybody who uses alcohol, you know, which is much more dangerous than cannabis is by any measure. So, you know, we're just so excited. And this is also something that is going to be heard around the world and around the country. I mean, we know other states can't wait for Prop 19 to pass so that they can, activists there can try it in their place. And then we really need this change to happen federally as well, you know, because they're still out there and they still have their laws. And this is going to be a challenge to get this passed, to get it implemented, and really to bring around, you know, a major paradigm shift in our country of one from where we are now that criminalizes, people who should not be criminalized, good cannabis consumers, and to a place where we have more equal protections for everybody in society, and judging people on their actions, not what's in their urine. and the whole thing like that. I mean, we can't wait for this day.
I can't wait either. That is for sure. One thing I want I think needs to be addressed is the recent thing that the governor Arnold did with decrimming, because from what we're seeing here, a lot of people are going in the direction of, well, the governor decrimmed, we don't need Prop 19 now. you know, I live in a decrim state, and I can tell you, it doesn't stop cops from harassing anybody. And now in the city of Cincinnati, for a while now, you've been able to be arrested, even though we are a decrim state. And so the cities can opt out of their state laws on things such as that. People still get searched. If in most counties in the state you get caught with possession and you have paraphernalia with it, you will lose your driver's license for 6 months. You'll be on probation along with that. So decrim to me, although might be better than a felony state, to me still is not legalization. It's only a bone that the governor threw just in time to try to disrupt Prop 19's vote. And I know there's a lot of people that are in the undecided that may be waffling because of that issue. So explain why Prop 19 is still important, even with that decrim that has just happened, which makes it a misdemeanor.
Well, I think that makes it more important than ever, because it shows that everybody's recognizing that we're moving in the direction that we need to in terms of getting rid of these penalties. But the thing is, if the legislature changes it, and I support Mark Leno on this bill, by the way. I mean, certainly we've been trying to get this passed for several years. The suspicious thing is that the governor chooses right before the election to sign it.
Yeah.
The timing is the suspicious thing. The bill itself is actually a very good thing. But the difference is that the legislature can always change it back. With Prop 19, not only will it make it legal, it will make it so they can't change it back. And the other thing is, I can't really see why people would vote to be subject to getting tickets every day for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, or to be subject to be searched every day for the rest of your life, or to be subject to losing your, or being discriminated against at your work every day for the rest of your life. Which, remember, if you, it's not like if you don't vote for Prop 19, something better happens magically. It's like, if you don't vote for this, you lose the lawful cultivation for non-medical use. You lose the ability of cities to have retail sales regulated. You lose the anti-discrimination section. You lose the a lot of protections that are in there that are incumbent upon the passage of this, and you lose the opportunity for the legislature to make changes to reduce penalties and so forth. Like right now, there's already a bill that's been drafted to knock down the existing felonies down into misdemeanors and so forth, and further reduce the legal risks of cannabis here in California, but it won't happen unless the initiative passes. So getting it passed means that we can never go backwards. We can only go forward for more and more freedom.
And I'd like to add, I don't know, you know, like, if your listeners, how would they feel if they had, every time they had a drink and a cop came up to them and gave them a $100 ticket. I mean, that doesn't, that's outrageous, and we shouldn't be subjected to that kind of treatment either. And aside from that, decrim really is a half measure, because it decriminalizes the possession and makes it an infraction rather than a misdemeanor. It doesn't regulate any of the cultivation, you know, or anything else, and that will still, the whole market will still be
illegal.
Illegal,
yeah.
Unless you're medical, of course. But
and that bill doesn't cover cultivation or sharing. It's only personal possession and transportation. So if you pass a joint to somebody, theoretically, it's still another misdemeanor.
I don't know why people who are in favor of legalization would not vote for Prop 19. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think it's just fear. I think, you know, that's it.
Even in our decrim state, where in most of the state it is a minor misdemeanor ticket offense, if somebody wants to own a gun, they still cannot own a gun even if it's a minor misdemeanor. Any drug offense prevents somebody from being armed in our state. So that's number one. So you still are in a criminal status, even though they say you're not. Now, there's also the element, let's say somebody doesn't pay their $100 fine. What happens next? Then you become a criminal with a warrant out for you. And if they pull you over again with the warrant and get caught with more stuff, then you're getting in trouble for a second time, which compounds it, and it still just goes on and on and on and on. So again, it's still being sucked into the criminal justice system, even in a decrim state. So it is half measure. And I do think it's suspicious that Governor Arnold did it when he signed it when he did.
It is suspicious, but, you know, and he probably did it to try to quash some of the support out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people are emboldened by it in a way. And, you know, and actually we welcome the fact that he did it because it's an important incremental step in the right direction.
Yes.
So, you know, we're not unhappy that it happened.
And there's something to be said that, like, he signed it. He's a lame duck. He can't be reelected. So this is, he has nothing to lose by signing it when he signs it. Similarly with the SB 420, the one that allows collective cultivation and so forth out in California, that was signed by Gray Davis as he was being removed from office by the voters.
Fantastic.
So when he had nothing to lose, that's when they seemed to be willing to sign it. But both of them had a record of vetoing everything else up until that moment. But bless their heart for that one signed thing they did sign. I'm not going to hold that against them.
And I think he had a lot of cover by law enforcement, because I think law enforcement was actually also behind the decrim bill, because they believe that it was pretty much all the way it was being enforced in terms of ticketing people, and people aren't going to jail, is still, you know, a waste of their time and resources as well. So they felt like, you know, it's pretty much there anyway. Now let's formalize it and make it an infraction rather than a misdemeanor. So.
Well, one thing that it did by him doing that is show that part of our argument and your argument in favor of Prop 19 is that change needs to be done, and marijuana isn't worth going to jail over. So he certainly has validated that point by doing the decrim.
Exactly.
Yeah, we totally welcome it.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're just about out of time. We went a lot longer than we wanted to, but you know what? We get to talk, and I get to talk with you guys. I love it. I appreciate it. And so I, real quick, again, give out all the websites that you want people to know about, specifically about Prop 19, and any phone numbers that you have as well for contacting.
Okay, I'll let you do that one, Mickey.
Well, I'd really encourage people to go to the official campaign website, which is yeson19.com, and there they can either donate or they can sign up to help get out the vote, as well as, so that's yeson19.com. Go to justsaynow.firedoglake.com. That's justsaynow.firedoglake.com, and that's being sponsored by Fire Dog Lake in conjunction with the Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and they're calling young people, because actually the vote will be contingent on the young people coming out to vote for it, because that's where our biggest base of support is coming from now, and they will make the difference in this campaign. And I'd encourage people to read all about all these things that we've been talking about at westcoastleaf.com, our newspaper, and hopefully they'll find it interesting and tell other people about it. But we need everybody's help to make this massive change that's going to really, it will be the bomb hit heard around the world, you know, if Prop 19 passes, and it will be a major step forward for the freedom and equality of all cannabis consumers worldwide. So.
A bomb is a good way
to come out and support us.
Yeah, a bomb is a good way to describe it, but you're right. It is about changing the paradigm. And this is, I believe it will be the tip of the critical mass that will cause that domino effect, not only in the rest of the country, but the rest of the world as well. And I can't wait for Tuesday to join in. And very quickly, one thing I did forget, you know, there's some different polls out there. And some of the polls that are being touted by the No on Prop 19 is that it's sliding in the polls, and I pretty much get it, and I know that you do, but a lot of people might be seeing this. So what is your take on that? As far, do you think that it's because people are afraid to say that they're going to vote for it when they're talking to a live person, and versus an automated system?
I would say it's too close. It's just too close to call, Lynn. Really, what it comes down to, it's you can find polls on both sides. There is that element. People are calling it the reverse Bradley effect, where people are afraid to say to a live person that they support marijuana legalization. And then there's other polls that show that it's slightly ahead. It's always been very close from the beginning, but this is the most support we've ever had for legalization in California, and we're very excited. The other thing that's happened is now the federal government, Eric Holder, the Attorney General, has weighed in, trying to dampen some of the support with fear that they will come in California and stop it from happening. But you know what? We had that same threat with Prop 215, And we overcame that challenge, and we have a full-fledged medical marijuana program going on in California. So we're not afraid of the federal intervention. It's going to take courage. It's going to take a lot of people standing up for their rights to implement this this initiative that would be passed by the people. So, you know, we're just hoping for that opportunity to make it happen.
Yeah.
To pass 19, to legalize it. And so we'll see what happens on Tuesday. It's all going to be dependent on who comes out to vote.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what the polls are telling us now is this is not the time for complacency. This is the time to get worked up and excited and get on the phones and call everybody and tell them, get out and vote for yes on Prop 19. This is our moment in history that we've been waiting for 38 years.
Yeah.
The last time we had this on the ballot here in California.
Yeah.
People would say, oh, well, it's not quite good enough, or I'm not going to in the mood to go out and vote because it's just a ticket now. Well, the heck with that. Get out there and vote.
Get out there and vote anyway. Well, very quickly, I'll tell you, about a week ago, our CBS affiliate here in Cincinnati, every day they do a different poll for the news. They start putting the poll out about noon, and on the 11 o'clock report, they give the results. And each segment that they're on, they remind everybody what the question of the day is, so on and so forth. And the question, of course, was, should California legalize cannabis, or, you know, the marijuana? Does the caller believe what, you know, they should or shouldn't? And it was 78-22 here locally in Cincinnati that you guys should definitely legalize.
All right.
So
we're hearing that from all around the world.
Yeah.
Calling that up and saying they are waiting for us to make the change. So
that's it.
California voters, don't let everybody down.
They've been watching us. You know, we got a call from people in activists in Argentina. We're
wow.
just left here. I mean, they really are paying attention.
Yeah.
And it just won't change California. It really will change the world.
It will.
Talk again after the election.
Absolutely. I was going to say that I want to have you guys on. Of course, I'm on Monday and Tuesday, so maybe throughout the week, next week, we'll get another recording and get it for air on Monday to give the results to talk about that.
Excellent.
Well, guys, wonderful to talk to you. You know, I love you both, and you have our support here with Hemp Rock, and everything that we do, we will do what we can on our end of the world here to help you guys out there on the West.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, guys, and I'm going to go ahead and hang up. Thanks.
Okay.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That, of course, has been Chris Conrad and Mickey Norris, leaders in Prop 19, and we will be talking about that on the Tuesday show throughout the elections tomorrow. Thanks, and you guys have a happy day out there.
A message about cannabis from former Sheriff's Deputy Jeffrey Studdard.
Like many other cops and law enforcement professionals, I've seen firsthand that the current approach on cannabis is simply not working. It's led to violent drug cartels, dealers in our schools and our streets, and cost millions of dollars without reducing consumption. That's why cops support Tax Cannabis 2010, the initiative to control and tax cannabis. It will provide billions to fund what matters and allow police to focus on violent crime. It's time to control it and tax it.
If you believe it's time to end cannabis prohibition, make a donation to Tax Cannabis 2010. Help spread the word about this common sense solution for a broken budget and a failed government policy. Learn more at taxcannabis.org or call 510-251-2507. That's 510-251-2507. Join the historic fight to change the system at taxcannabis.org. Paid for by Tax Cannabis 2010 with major funding from SK Seymour LLC, a medical cannabis provider, DBA Oaksterdam University, a cannabis educator.
This has been the Monday edition of Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, the Burn Man, and the Pottsbury Dope Boy Pot and Hash.
Speaking for the legalization of marijuana.
Hemp Rock Radio airs Mondays and Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on WBQC-LP. Find Hemp Rock Radio archives at weedradionetwork.com.
Watch Hemp Rock TV on Northern Kentucky's Insight Cable Channel 21, Cincinnati's Time Warner Cable Channel 4 and 24, and now online at weedradionetwork.com.
You can join the Hemp Rockers list at HempRock.com and the Hemp Rock Hemp Line at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP. To help end Cincinnati's harmful marijuana ordinance, please visit CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. That's CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. Hemp Rock Radio, the Pottsbury Bakery, and Hemp Rock Cafe are brought to you by Hemp Rock Productions. Thanks for listening to Hemp Rock Radio and Radio Free Queen City, a member of Media Bridges Community Media Center on 95.7 FM WVQC-LP Cincinnati. WVQC-LP broadcasts from Cincinnati's Computer Cooperative Studios. You can listen online, become a member, and support the station at WVQC.org. Coming up next on WBQCLP is Jay Allday with Cincinnati's Conscience, where hippie meets the hood.